Hoi hoi, welcome to Head Game.
Our guest today is Reggie Walker. Reggie's a former NFL player and captain. He's a mental, physical, and sexual abuse survivor and survivor advocate. He's a speaker. He's a board member of 1in6.org. He's currently a graduate student. He's in school studying school and clinical counseling. He's a broadcaster and analyst. He's a problem solver. Reggie, welcome to Head Games.
Hey, how you guys doing today? Great to be on.
Doing well, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I'm so pumped for this.
Excellent. Good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get to where you are today? You have quite a resume.
How did I get to where I'm at now? Okay. So I'll just give you the brief version. So I was a military brat. Moved around the countries, lived in a lot of different situations where I was a minority, where I was a majority, where we had money, where we were so poor, I had to get food from the church. I grew up in a situation where there was a lot of love, but I also suffered through a lot of mental, physical, and sexual abuse. And I used all of that energy, you could say, and funneled that into sports. And I became quite good at it. I played football, basketball, baseball, rugby, anything basically that was active to get me moving. Ended up getting a scholarship to Kansas State. Had a very okay time there. It definitely could have been a lot better, but did well enough to get myself into the NFL. I was undrafted, worked my way up to a team captain. And now as I'm retired, I decided to do something to help with a lot of problems that I saw on my path to where I'm at today. And that's kind of currently where I'm at right now.
Yeah. That's quite a journey. It really seems like you've been able to focus your energy at times when you've needed to early on with sports. And then afterwards, focusing your energy with, you know, all the stuff you're getting into now. You feel like you've been able to do that? Like it's been easy for you to channel that energy in the right way?
Now it is, for sure. And I definitely had a system of operating from basically first year of college all the way into I ended my career and then even now. There's been times where I let go of that system, and that's when I kind of had my issues. Also, too, I've been to a treatment center twice because of depression. My depression had been so bad that I absolutely needed to go, and thank God I went, and thank God I do have my wife because she basically pushed me on a plane to get there. But I'm definitely good, and I just had to understand really one lesson in how I do things, because one of the big things to understand about me is I did a lot and I know I've done a lot, but I had to do a lot on my own. So when it's come to taking help and using help, that's been a real big issue for me until I actually went to the treatment center and actually worked on that and did the work necessary in therapy to kind of work through that thing. I'm golden now.
That's great to hear, man. I mean, something that is, I've done a little bit of research on depression, and something that's interesting about depression that's not true of most disorders in general is that as people's symptoms get worse, they actually become less likely to seek help, right? Mm-hmm. And so it can be really, really difficult to prompt people who are kind of falling into that spiral to get the help that they need. So kudos to you, kudos to your wife for seeking out that help and you know, allowing yourself to get to where you are today. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the system that you talked about that you has kind of helped keep you on track?
Oh yeah, because my dad, he had he's a military guy, Sergeant Walker. He had a background in logistics in the Army, and one of the things that he taught me, because he didn't really teach me how to fish, even though I wanted to learn. Or like had to change a tire, had to figure that one out. But he taught me really how to understand people, how to understand relationships, how to understand situations, situational awareness, and really understand how I fit into the big picture, which all really taught me to be extremely, extremely objective about everything. which really saved my ass when it came to a lot of situations, because I'm very calculated in how I do things. Even though I'm a fun guy, and if you guys knew me a little better, I'm a very wild guy too. But everything I do is very calculated, very strategic, very purposeful. And he taught me that. And the system that I went through in college, if I didn't have that, I would have went nuts. Especially around my third year, when the depression was so bad that I was just in my room. And it was one of those situations where I had to really dig deep and understand, you know, things like what's going to get me out of this bed, you know, and how can I still accomplish what's needed in school and on the field while I know what's going inside is going on. And it helped me to just really understand myself better, understand, you know, what's necessary for me to do what's needed to get done. And it was something that separated me from everyone else, especially given my college situation, where we're on a team full of depressed individuals. Everybody's depressed. It was a very bad situation. We sucked. We were losing a bunch of games. Our head coach was not a great person. I'm going to hold my tongue here, but not a great person. Did a lot of damage to a lot of kids. But it separated me. And then when I got to the NFL and you're really operating in a den of snakes, really, it really saved me. So when it comes to the work I'm doing now, that's the system that I try to teach other people.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great, man. Thank you for sharing a little bit more. So sticking with the concept of mental health, can you, I don't know how much you're going to be able to say about the NFL in general, right? But can you talk a little bit to the current state of mental health in the NFL as you see it, and kind of just thinking about what are some of the things that the average NFL player might struggle with?
How I see it. Okay. So one, I feel like it's at a point now, it's at the beginning stages where they understand that there's an issue. They understand that things need to get done. And now they're beta testing a bunch of things. They're trying to figure out what's going to be the best way of doing things. They're addressing it, but they're still trying to figure it all out. So I, you know, kudos to them for trying and seeing that it's a problem. They still have a lot of ways to go, a long ways to go, but and I think they would say the same thing, but at least they're addressing the problem.
Yeah.
As far as the mental issues a player goes through, I'm glad you asked that question, because our coach told us a story in college about a guy. I'm not going to say his name, but he ended up going first round, and he was living in this big house and he had all this money. And he was like describing how his life is. And one of the things that just really shocked me about it was the fact that he goes home to this big house and he's by himself all the time. Everything he does is by himself. He's always alone. And when I got to the NFL, I was in that phase, because everyone around you, for the most part, is a snake. And I don't say that lightly. And I'm not the guy who, because I loved my career, I loved the NFL, I loved everything that I accomplished on the field, but it is what it is. There's a lot of people who are trying to use you for whatever, try to make money off of you, try to use you for something. And even when it comes to the situation of just being a player and the anxiety that goes into preparing every week, the fact that you're on a week-to-week job, like forget all that contract stuff, like you are on a week-to-week job, and any little mistake can get you out of there. This is your dream. So the pressure that's involved is absolutely insane. Not to mention the fact that you don't really have anybody you can talk to except other players, because they're the only ones who fully get it. And there's not a lot of empathy from a lot of people because of the fact that you're making so much money. So you can't really talk to anyone about it. But it puts you in a very lonely, paranoid state where you're always constantly trying to see where you can get attacked from, like see where you can get hit from. And, you know, you're kind of just, you know, like from all angles all the time. Yeah. But yeah, that's basically what you're in. And it took me years to kind of break that mindset. It took years. I feel like the longer you're in it, the more that mindset just solidifies.
Yeah. That's intense, man. I mean, so given all that, and you mentioned some sort of beta kind of programs that the NFL is throwing out there, given all the things that you've just talked about that an average player might have to deal with, are there sufficient resources to deal with these things? Like, is the NFL doing enough? Or as you said, is it just at the beginning and they've only kind of recognized what the issue is?
It's still at the beginning. I know that because I actually have a proposal with them currently to do a program. Me and a therapist that used to work for the Texans, Karen Winston, we actually have a proposal that we sent off with them about proposing a program that would help players with the transition. But the thing is that's really difficult to break is you are paranoid and you have a very legitimate reason to be paranoid about a lot of things. Just to be clear. So when it comes to just being able to disclose, and I'm not even talking about the fact that, you know, you're a football player and you're playing in a league and you're a manly man, you know, you're a man and, you know, and you can't, and you're ultra this mindset of I'm a barbarian, I am tough, nothing gets to me. So you are not the best candidate to open up about your issues.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, a lot of your issues are the reason why you're so good in the first place. Hmm. Because think about where a lot of these guys come from, the backgrounds they come from. They usually come from single parent households, from the hood, living in poverty. Lots of guys have suffered through abuse, whether it's mental, physical, sexual. Whether they're admitted to it now, they're going to figure it out later, especially when the crutch of football is taken away. They've gone through very tough times that build that resilience that's needed for football, but that same resilience keeps them from getting the help that they're need that's needed to actually be a stable individual.
Yeah.
Which is – there's a lot of angles when it comes to this.
Yeah. I'm guessing that same paranoia and that same culture of being a manly man, this is the apex of being a manly man. that it's very much part of like the norm or the code of behavior for a lot of teams to play when you're injured and do whatever it takes to get on the field. And you've mentioned this and that there's along those lines, pressure to do whatever it takes and use a Toradol, which is a big time painkiller that a lot of players rely on. What's your advice? What's your advice for players who are being manly men and, you know, don't want to show weakness in any way and they want to do whatever they can to get on the field? What's your advice for players? Should they play hurt because it is a week to week job, or is it not worth it?
Great question. I think my advice would be to the guys who are in it, the fact that you've got to understand you're burning the candle at both ends here. So yes, you can make a lot of money and you put so much into this, you sacrifice so much into this. And I know that you have to make it worth it. Everything that you've gone through, but at the same time, who's going to be there when it's done? Who's going to be there when it's done? And you always have to keep that in the back of your mind when you're out there. Do I want my kids to be the ones taking care of me? Do I want to be putting an old folks home when I'm 40? What am I trying to get out of this? Because just in my situation, the reason why I played 6 years and I dipped out, well, I played seven and I left was the fact I knew I was burning the candle at both ends. And I knew that what I wanted out of life, I had already gotten it from football. Now I needed something else. Mm-hmm. And I made the decision to walk away. I could probably still be playing now, but I knew I was burning a candle at both ends. I knew that I had a ton of injuries, and I knew that there's a lot I wanted to do outside of football. So it was easy for me to walk away. But when it comes to the guys playing, make sure that you're just asking yourself, what am I trying to get out of this? And then once you get it, leave. Once you get it, leave. Hmm. But also understanding you are burning a candle at both ends, and you got a family to think of. You also have yourself to think of when you're done. So just keep that in mind when you're doing these, making these decisions, because I can't make the decision of deciding if a guy's going to play or not. It's all up to them. Sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it's not. Just going off my situation, there's sometimes it wasn't worth it. There's sometimes it was worth it. I can't make that decision for anyone.
Yeah. It really sounds like the NFL needs some kind of intervention, that there's so many unaddressed mental and physical issues that again, this culture of being a manly man pushes you to go through, but it sounds like it's to the detriment of a lot of players in the long term. And it's hard to know that. It's hard to know that because you're young and you're trying to be a manly man and you're in this culture. But I think you have a very interesting perspective from the outside being retired, but you had the presence of mind when you were a player to say, I'm looking ahead and I need to be careful about where this is going. And maybe not a lot of current players do that.
Mm-mm. No, like I said, and I see this now, not to toot my own horn, I'm definitely not doing that in any way, but how I saw things was definitely not how most people mm-hmm. see it. I really could take a step back and look at everything that was going around me and then move based off that objective picture. That's how I just do things. And most guys, they're just, nope, I'm kind of just right here in front of me. Like, that's all I'm seeing. I'm not seeing everything else.
Yeah. Is that, you think, part of a systemic shortfall that, like, these guys aren't often set up for what they're going to do after they get done playing? And maybe some of that's to your point from earlier of, like, a lot of these guys are coming from shitty backgrounds where they didn't have a ton of opportunity. And so it's like football is the way to get out and the way to better yourself. But then is there any resources for them to consider what's going to come next? Right. Because that seems like it allowed you to think beyond the game and think beyond what was going to happen when you quit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're right about, there's actually a couple issues with that. I mean, a couple things that, come to mind with that, you know how you go to school and you're a kid in kindergarten and they ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you're like, all right, I want to be an astronaut, or I want to be a zookeeper, or I want to be a doctor, right? And then you draw your little picture and then that's it. The thing that always got me about that was they never ask you two very important questions. One, okay, so how are you going to get there? And then two, why? And when it comes down to those questions, because they can't, a teacher, you know, nothing against teachers, because I love teachers, I'm, you know, a teacher myself, but growing up, they can't teach you how to be an astronaut. They can't teach you these skills. And when it comes to a lot of these people from the backgrounds that they come from, when it comes to critical thinking skills, which is a big one, like being able to critically think, most of these guys do not have that capacity to do it, but no, they have it because they do it all the time on a football field, but having the confidence to transfer it over into regular life, given they haven't had to do a lot of these things in their life because football was number one. And when you're in college, they have all this support staff around you that gets all these things done for you. So you got to focus on football and going to class. When you go to the NFL, you can just pay somebody to do a lot of stuff because the fact of the matter is, too, the more time I can spend working on my craft, the better I'm going to be, the more money I'm going to make. Right. Every second that I'm not putting into my craft, I'm losing money. Right. So when it comes to really thinking about what I need to do outside or what I'm going to do when I'm done, you're losing money when you do that.
Yeah.
And it's a crazy way of thinking about it, but it's the absolute truth. You have to focus your time and attention on football while you're doing it. And hopefully some guys, you know, some of the good ones are lucky ones, or some of the ones who came into college, because if you don't come into it with by college, you're not going to pick it up 9 times out of 10 if you're going to the league immediately. But some of the guys who came in with critical thinking skills, strategic thinking skills, going into the situation, they're okay. Mm-hmm. But most of people don't, because of the backgrounds they come from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a great point. So you mentioned resiliency earlier and how that has played a role in your life with some of the things you've gone through, and really how that plays a role in a lot of players' lives. What do you think the key attribute is in building resiliency? Like, is there one thing you could pinpoint? Is it something like honesty, bravery, conscientiousness? Like, what's the characteristic that really allows people to be resilient in your view?
To be completely blunt about it, being resilient is a choice. It is literally a choice that you make over and over and over again. And sometimes it's an easy choice, sometimes it's a very difficult choice, but you make the same choice over and over again. I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep going. I'm not stopping. I'm not quitting. And with that resiliency, you also have to have this faith in yourself that to anyone else would seem insane. Like, I'm going to fly today. I'm going to fly. I'm flying. No one's going to stop me. I'm doing it. It sounds insane, but you got to believe in that so much and be willing to do whatever it's going to take to get there and make that choice that I'm going to keep jumping off this deck until I fly. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep flying and falling over and over and over again, millions of times, like literally millions. And until you finally actually figure out how to do it. And, that, you know, that's the thing that really, at the end of the day, really does separate people, making that choice. And then when you get in, you know, because yeah, I was very talented. I'll be very blunt about it. I was a very talented individual. But playing in NFL, it's not about talent. Not entirely. Hell no. Hell no. Yeah. It's more about relationships, building relationships. It's just like any other business in that aspect. It's very political. You know, we're going to play our guy because we like our guy, or we're going to play this guy because he's making more money than you.
Right.
It's very business world like. And making that choice to be resilient when you're the second guy and you know you should be playing, or you're hurt, or you're not getting what you feel like you deserve, or you're afraid of going out there, or whatever. When it comes to being resilient, it's just you're still saying, all right, I'm still going to do it. And that's really, to me, what resilience is. That's what it's all about. That's what's really important about it to me.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because as fans, we watch the game and we think, well, they're going to play their best players, right? Yeah. Like, you know, especially guys with like stats backgrounds, we're like, well, analytically, I can see who the best play is. But like, you have really, I think, highlighted an interesting aspect of it, that it's just like the real world, that people are snakes and people are snakes in business, and that it is incredibly political in terms of playing time and all that stuff. That's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's why it's hard for me to watch it at this point, because I could sit there and look at the TV and just look at these guys, the ones that a normal fan's not going to be able to see. And I'm like, man, that guy's a player. Why is he not playing? Or look at this guy, like, man, they don't ever throw him the ball. Or like, this guy gets a carry. Why is he not getting the ball? And then, but you know why, because you've been in that situation and you've seen it for 7 years, what it is. So it's, you know, it's tough for me to watch it nowadays. It's still a fan, but it's still tough for me to watch.
I think that's interesting too, because we often think of and refer to sports as the only real meritocracy, right? Like, this is the only place where the playing field's level, best dudes play or best women play, whatever it is. And you're basically blowing that up and saying, no, that's bullshit. Like, there's so much politicking involved that, like, yeah, kind of, if you're, I don't know, Tom Brady or whatever, yeah, you play. But, like, if you're anybody beneath that, maybe there's all kinds of other stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. If you're not a first or second round draft pick, or if you're not one of the, I call them the 2 percenters, like the 2%, like the two guys on the team or three guys who have these massive yeah. contracts.
Yeah.
Everyone else is playing in an entirely different NFL. Where you're here, it's week to week. You know, yeah. it's week to week. You know, if you make one mistake, you're gone and you might never play again. But the other guys, they can do whatever you want. Those are the guys that you see written about in the TV shows and the movies, and that's what they're living. But no, yeah, hell no, they ain't playing the best players, man. Hell no. Hell no.
Human's gonna human, I guess, right?
Like, human's gonna human.
For real.
You've spoken a lot about this, I think, this really interesting and really powerful tool set that you've had, and your ability to be resilient and in many ways lucky. And you're also very, like, you're reflective on where you've been, and you're open about it. And you've said that you've been a mental, physical, and sexual abuse survivor, and that you're a survivor advocate. If there was one thing that you could teach other people about sexual abuse, what would it be?
That it messes you up on a chemical level. And the fact that it messes you up on a chemical level, it affects every aspect about you. And when it comes to people empathizing, because you need to empathize with people who've gone through abuse and understand, instead of looking at the behavior, you got to look underneath that. Like, where is this behavior coming from? And like in my situation, I felt as if I was always misunderstood by everyone, or I felt like I couldn't connect with everyone because of this secret that I was holding. I didn't say anything about it until I told a girlfriend my junior year of college. Wow. And then I didn't tell anyone again for 5 more years after that. And then I didn't tell anyone again until 4 years after that. I mean, well, no, 2 years after that. And when I sit here and look at everything that happened objectively, I understand that, yeah, I had a chemical imbalance, and it really helped. It really gave me this crazy perspective of things. And because of that, I made a lot of decisions that I don't necessarily regret at this time, because it happened, and I'm glad I have to, because I got to learn from it. But I was showing all these behaviors and doing all these things that really did hurt a lot of people. I also had a hell of a lot of fun, but I also was super depressed, and I was also very angry, and I showed all this stuff. It's like, I did a lot of things. But if people could really understand that it messes with your brain, especially with the fact that I started getting molested when I was 4. So I was still forming. And like, my brain was still forming. Everything about me was still forming. And like, a lot of the reasons why I did a lot of things I did, because I was just, or I was chemically.
Yeah.
So I think if people could understand that. But the other thing is, and I have to say this, you can definitely overcome it. 1,000,000%. Even with the chemicals going, your chemical imbalance, even with all the issues going on, you can 100% overcome it. It's pretty brutal of a process. The longer you take to go through it, going through the therapy, going through the treatments, doing what's necessary, very brutal. Be very honest about that. But if you go through it, you will be fine. You'll be okay. You can live the life you want. You can make the connections with people you want to make. You can be who you actually want to be, that person who's really deep inside of you. You can really be this person. It's very possible.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's great to hear. I think that's great to hear, because there's a lot of people. Now, you talk about resiliency. You talk about just getting up again and saying, like, nope, I'm going to keep going. Nope, I'm going to do this again. That's encouraging. I think that's really, it's brave of you to be honest about it. I think, again, like, you seem to have had the skill set. I think you've been lucky. That's great to hear. I'm glad that things have worked out, and you have had, not just that, but like, you've had other challenges, and making an NFL team is no easy task either way. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah. It's great to hear. Inspiring for sure. And really appreciate your candor about this, right? This is like a taboo topic for a lot of people to talk about, especially the manliest of men playing in the NFL, right? So I think it's especially important, honestly, to hear that kind of experience and hear that kind of perspective from somebody who we often tend to put up on a pedestal as being like these kind of perfect athletes that never have anything bad happen to them or never have anything go wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned empathy, and I think it's interesting because the difference between, and Ben, stop me on this one if I'm wrong, but the difference between empathy and sympathy. Sympathy is understanding how someone is feeling, whereas empathy is actually feeling it. Yeah. And I think empathy is actually really difficult in this case, because not everybody has been through sexual abuse. So it's difficult for people to empathize.
Yeah.
And I think it really takes a very careful sympathy for a lot of people to understand the situation and to understand what that's like to go through on a chemical level. Do you feel like you can communicate that to people, because it is difficult to communicate because not everyone has experienced it? How do you feel people have received it when you've spoken to people about it?
People have received it different ways. And what I've had to understand because of the different responses I've gotten is that the more in depth that I can be about the emotions, about what I was going through, about my experiences, as elaborate as I can be, it helps people really understand how it really feels living with the effects of trauma. And the responses have, you know, been all over the place. Mostly they're positive, but you know, human's gonna human. And some people, they're everyone goes through stuff, you know,
yeah,
get over it, be a man or whatever. And yeah. I am trying to get over it. Like, I am trying to be a man about it, but I'm also here talking to you about it so I can get it off my chest, so I can move on with my day. But the ability to empathize, I feel, is a skill set that you hone and develop over time, but you have to want to hone and develop it over time. And most people, just from my experience, haven't really wanted to do that. They'd rather just judge.
Yeah.
And go off of their whatever they want to believe reality is, instead of just looking at reality for reality's sake, truth for truth's sake. They don't want to do that. So what I do is I just go in depth as much as I can to be like, this is why I did this. And I go down the line. Since I can be this way, I see it does help people. But if the person's not trying to understand how it feels, is really trying to embody what it would be like walking through my shoes, if they're not trying, I might as well be talking to a wall. So the biggest way that people can help with that is just try to do it. Yeah. Just try and understand it's a process. Yeah. Attempt to do it. And then understand you're going to get better at doing it.
Yeah. And research supports what you're saying, man, your observations. Like, people can learn empathy. They can learn to be empathetic. And to underscore your point, it's just hard. It takes work to learn, to kind of train ourselves in these kind of psychological skills. It's really difficult, but again, it can happen. It is possible.
Very much so.
So good. It's a good message to preach for sure. So last thing, we just want to have you plug your organization, man, 1 in 6. So tell us about what you're doing, what you guys are all about. Just want to hear more.
Okay, so 1 in 6 is an organization that helps male sexual abuse survivors and their families. You know, we do support groups. We do a ton of work around helping men to heal. That's basically the big thing that we do. That's our main objective. And, you know, I've been working with them for a while. One of the main things that I do for them is really just going out there and like sharing my story and connecting with other organizations that could help with the cause. And, you know, it's been great work. Great people are involved with the organization. And it's something that's just needed, you know, especially since 1 in 6 males have been sexually abused. And speaking of that, because I do have to, I know I was plugging them, but we were talking about the locker room and I'm telling you about guys with abuse. So I do have to leave with this story. So, and I'll be quick because I don't know. I don't know how much time we have. So when I got to about my 4th, 5th year in the league, that's when I started being okay with what happened with me and started sharing my story. And I started sharing my story first to guys in the locker room. And when I started sharing my story to guys, the response I got almost every single time, I'm trying to think of a time I didn't get this response and I can't think of one, but every single time it was, that happened to me too. And I always asked them, when was the first time that you said something about this? And every single guy said, this was the very first time. So when I sit here and went, so one of the things that really drives me to do the work that I'm doing and sharing my story is, in my mind, I'm seeing all these ticking time bombs going on. Like, because I know how I felt living with this stuff. I could only imagine how someone else is feeling. And then why I use football to help me, it was like therapy for me. I was nuts. But, oh yeah, I was bad shit. Thank God I had that. And thank God that a lot of these guys do have football. Because even though as violent as it is, being able to burn that energy out is very healthy for this type of person. I just wanted people to kind of understand that, and for the guys who are listening to this or going to listen to this, definitely go talk to somebody as soon as you can. And shoot, if you guys need to talk to me, I can leave you guys my email. I'll leave you guys my phone number. Right. If I don't want to pick up the phone, I just don't pick up the phone. I've had the same number since high school.
Oh yeah.
We've talked a lot about, you know, this idea of being a man, and obviously an NFL locker room is certainly conjuring a lot of that, like, you know, tough guys and bench presses and crushing beers and whatever that is. But I think, I think to me, what really means to be a man is to be courageous. And I think to take responsibility. And I think you're doing both of those things in spades, especially with the challenges that you've dealt with. Your energy is contagious. I think a lot of people are going to be lucky to have you as an advocate, as a mentor, as a teacher. I know we've been lucky to speak with you today. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we've got nothing but the best wishes for you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. This was a great experience. You guys are awesome. Great questions. I love being on a show where the hosts ask great questions, because you would be surprised.
Well, good. We appreciate it. Yeah, man, we really appreciate having you. It's fun to talk. I mean, as Brett said, your energy is super contagious, and your mission, what you're doing now, is spectacular. Really, really, really worthwhile work, obviously.
I appreciate it. And you got to tell me where you got the cardigan and the glasses from, because that's pretty swaggy.
we'll talk about it off air.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks as always to Gladi Ice for putting together today's show. Please subscribe and rate where applicable. Reggie, I don't know if you want to give your phone number out, but where can people find you if they're looking for you?
Oh, the easiest spot is LinkedIn. I check that on the regular. I know it's not Twitter or Instagram or whatever, but that's my favorite one because it's the least toxic.
You can find us on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Brett Levine. And you can find that guy on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD. Thanks as always for tuning in.